everyone, James here. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you would like to check out our previous 200 plus episodes, we're including exclusive interviews with the likes of Jake Snake Roberts, Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, and many more, please head over to our YouTube channel where you can watch all of them in video format, and also check out exclusive clips and also exclusive streams only on YouTube. So, thanks, and until then, we'll catch you in the next
one. Bonjour, everyone. Welcome to another live stream edition of Cafe de Rene. James here, joined once again by Star Show, Mr. Rene Dupree. Rene, I don't use the word exclusive that much, but today I'm going to make an exception for that.
Yes, indeed. A man that I've known, that I first met in 2002. So 22 years ago, in Cincinnati, Ohio, at the tryout for the WWE, Mr. Travis Tomko and Rene Dupree first met. Yep. And when I first met Travis Tomko, I was only 18 years old, and intimidated is just not that you can't even describe, because Tomko is about 6 foot six. At the time, you must have been what, 280?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, 275, mark, 285. Yeah.
Completely tatted up. And you know, I'm a small town French Canadian boy. I've never seen anything like it. And well, he is the man, the myth, the legend, Travis Tomko. Bonjour, monsieur. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you guys for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to get on here. I've been wanting to get on here with you for a long time, and the stars have aligned, and here we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Desperate for a fucking a guest, and I was like, please, Travis, please, 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 please.
I think you even brought up some bribe you gave my daughter 20 years ago. He's like, remember that time I gave your daughter $5? Or something like that.
Yep. So, okay, we were in Louisville, and Travis had a beautiful daughter, and they were going through this phase where you couldn't swear. So if you swore around Travis's daughter, you got to put money in the swear jar. And me being me, not being ignorant and naive, I actually dropped a few F-bombs, and I felt so bad. I looked, I didn't have any change, so I only had it was a 20. I said, here, take it.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
So how you been, man?
God, I'm good, man. I'm good. Great. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm not in the scene, the wrestling scene much anymore. I do follow, especially my close friends and brothers. I don't watch it regularly. Part of that's just my high level of competitiveness. You know, I've got so many injuries, Rene. Yeah. I can run it down, but there came a point both with the, you know, where I got on the pain pills and what was causing that once I finally, you know, said enough was enough, I thought slightly about trying to get back in, but I knew it would kill me. You know, I really did. Yeah. And as sad as that is, it's the truth. You know, you're looking around, it's like there's somebody that we know dying, you know, every few months. And I'm just trying to avoid that. I'm not going to pretend I'm a guy that lives to be 80, but I'm going to do my best to try not to catapult myself into those unfortunate obituaries that are happening, you know. Right. So I've been doing great. The point to that message is I've been doing great, taking care of my body. Got all of my stuff fixed. I've currently had two hip replacements because the first one didn't work well. And we'll circle back to that. You may remember, a lot of people don't know the story, but I broke my pelvis in development. And I was literally supposed to go start television the next week because, as you guys know, I was a bodyguard for Limp Bizkit. And yep. Limp Bizkit was playing WrestleMania.
Right.
And I was going to be flying out that week. Something was going to start. So I'm in there with Matt Morgan. This is not Matt's fault, by the way. We're doing something simple, and I ended up taking a bump, and I guess it's kind of like he was going down, the ranking was coming up, I hit the back of my head, knocked myself out, my hamstring went back, and basically it's called an avulsion fracture, where your femur goes like this into your pelvis,
yeah,
and the hamstring just ripped the pelvis apart. And you remember, I finished the match, I think I was tagging with Seven, rolled out of the side of the ring, I'm like, I can't feel my legs, and then, you know, we go to the hospital, and long story short, they put me in traction, but that started. I probably should have never wrestled after that.
No shit.
They were like, I don't know if it's going to heal right. Probably. But I basically lied to everybody and said, yeah, I'm fine. This guy called. I think I was calling the office like 2 days later. Probably, you know, just not wanting to lose my job, you know. So
exactly.
That's what started it. So about my whole career, I had my femur just rubbing on what they call the acetabulum joint. And this notch that was created getting cortisone shots once every 9 months and every 6 months and every, you know, try to get through that. And so you can clearly figure out the natural progression of where that goes. And then you add the, you know, knee injuries and all that stuff. But so I've had 4 knee surgeries, 1 right knee replacement. The 2 hip replacements, 4 shoulder surgeries, and then I had a shoulder replacement 2 years ago. Of course, a fractured neck and fractured back, but that wasn't as bad. Those are the major ones, all the concussions, and then, you know, as many torn muscles as you can imagine. So,
right. Yeah. Wrestling's fake, though, right? Wrestling's fake.
It's really fake, man. You know, and it's funny. Here's the irony. When I was in Japan, I didn't get hurt because the strong style.
Right.
And it's like you go in there. It's like when you get, it's like, you know, the States is a little different. Well, you know, it's like the whole time I was in Japan, I never got hurt.
Never got hurt.
It's a lot more physical.
It's a lot more physical. But the thing is, your bumps meant something over there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
You weren't doing this bumping and feeding bullshit at your size. I don't know. Exactly. When you got your size over there bumps, it means something.
Yeah. They throw you out. They take you to Tokyo Airport if you start doing that stuff as a big man. Just get back on the plane, go home.
That's it. That's right, man. Wow. So let's just talk about your life in general, man. It's so freaking cool. You were before wrestling, you were actually a bodyguard for Limp Bizkit. Now let's talk about that.
Yeah. So that a lot of people don't know how I actually got into wrestling. I didn't really do any independence. Didn't even learn to wrestle. Right. I did have some friends in Florida that wrestled, and I kind of was hanging out with them. It first started, I was at Daytona Bike Week or something in my early 20s, walking around my shirt off like an idiot, you know, played some college football. So, and I do remember seeing Paul White there. Okay. And I'm walking around with my shirt off, just being a knucklehead. And he walks over to me. He's like, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" I'm like, I'm drinking beer right now, you know? And he's like, "You should wrestle." And I was like, "I got some friends." And one of my buddies did some stuff. He's like, "Here, call my agent," you know? So I called the guy and he kind of gave me, I don't even remember who the guy was. And I called the guy and he's like, "Yeah, you know, you need to do this and do this. Like little big guys, you know, that's the story they always tell you, right?"
Right, right.
I was like, "Well, I don't know how to do anything.
At least you're honest.
Yeah. You know, and so long story short, that was the first contact with anything, wrestling.
Yeah.
And then Jacksonville's a hotbed for rock bands. Bunch of rock bands coming out of there. Limp Bizkit at the time was just getting on their feet. My buddy was doing all the stuff. They just basically were, I guess garage band, but a little bit bigger. And once, you know, they got famous, I got a call from, he's like, you know, I kind of had a reputation down at the beach where all the bars are. It's not, you know, not really being somebody to start trouble, but I definitely get everybody out of trouble, which is kind of where the problem solver came from, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to get to that in a minute. So, long story short, we're going to Europe. Well, Fred Durst does tattoos, and his roommate did all my tattoos.
Sweet.
Yeah. And so as the story goes, Fred did a tattoo on Jonathan Davis from Korn, gave him a demo. They're like, "Hey, we're going to Europe." So I went with him. I'm like, that's how I did that. So I did that for 2.5-3 years. And then how the WWE comes into play is at the end of it, they were doing this tour. You guys may or may not remember where the Napster craze came into effect. This is before file sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Fred was really smart. He knew this was going to be the future. And at the time, there was some people in the industry, the music industry, that were saying, "Oh, we can't let these kids download our music." And so, you know, and the main one was Lars, the drummer from Metallica. That stopped, and Lars ended up, you know, coming around because he realized, well, hey, I can make money doing this. And in fact, nobody's going to sell records anymore. But, you know, and that, so I get both sides of that argument. So as a joke, Fred's like, he had the kid from Napster put up $5 million to do a Back to the Basic tour. And it was standing room only, like 3,000, 4,000 seat venues.
Right.
And you wait in line, and Fred's like, "I'm giving a concert away for free, but you got to wait in line." So people were waiting in line for 2 or 3 days. And so the gimmick was they would put a Metallica cover band on.
Okay.
They would put Cypress Hill on.
Okay.
And then they would they'd stop the show, take the event security away, the barricade away, put a chain link fence 3 foot into the stage, and put me in front of it. And I had to stop everybody from getting over the fence. So MTV filmed it. Right. And as I understand it, somebody from the office was like, "Who in the hell is that guy? We need to get a hold of him." So that's what kind of triggered. I went to Memphis and trained for a little while. I got a crash course from my buddy in Daytona. And then next time, Charlie Haas and those guys, I went up there. I think it was it was in Memphis. I trained with them for a little while, went home. They closed that territory down. And then that's about the time that I was actually on the road finishing up a tour. And I got a call, said, we're going to do a tryout in Cincinnati, the same one you were at.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I got to be honest with you. I haven't wrestled in probably 9 months or seen a wrestling ring, but I'll be there.
Right.
So that's kind of how it started. And when, as I understand it, the problem solver came from when they called the record label and they were like, hey, you know, what kind of kid is this? And they're like, he's been our ace problem solver since we've had him. We've had zero lawsuits and we're sorry to see him go. So that's where it came from.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to have to jump in, Renee. Tomko, any crazy Fred Durst stories?
Again, not really. But to be fair, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not going to go washing it out in the streets. But I will say this. It wasn't sex, drugs, and rock and roll like everybody imagines, like I'm sure the 80s and 90s were. Those kids, you know, had it together. You got to understand, Fred, he was the mastermind there, but two of the guys, the drummer and the guitar player, were art school kids from Jacksonville, right. You know, not partiers. The only one that had a little bit there was DJ Lethal. He was in House of Pain, but he was a little bit more mature. So there was nothing crazy going on. The craziness came from the fans.
Right.
And then, right. You know, he poured it out on those shows. If you've ever seen one of those, like Woodstock or any of that, you know, that's where it got poured out at. And I think Fred had a vision for where he wanted to go. He's a very smart guy. He directed all those videos, all the Korn videos with the bullet going slow. He directed all that. And as I understand it, he's done some movies since then. So
nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So to answer your question or to sidestep your question, maybe, but I'm not going to tell.
Fair enough.
All right. So from Cincinnati, you get hired, you get a contract.
And yeah.
Then we meet again in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah.
I got there in August. When did you get there? In 2002. I got there August 2002.
I think it was right around the same time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember we did the try. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I did the best I could. I think I did all right. Mm-hmm. You know, Charlie Haas was really good. He helped me out a lot because, you know, we had some time together. Shelton Benjamin, you know, all those guys. Trying to think who else there. Kevin Fertig, you know, I'd met Kevin in Memphis. So yeah. That it was kind of cool that I got to do the tryout with some guys that are already known.
Yes.
And respected.
Yeah.
And I think AJ Styles was there.
Yep. Matt Morgan.
Yeah. And it was cool. And so I get home and I'm not sure what's gonna happen. I don't know if this is, you know, because this kind of happened in Memphis. I was there.
Yeah.
And you know, they had an agent come down and like, hey, we like what you're doing. The Mean Street Posse guys were there at that time. Okay. And I, you know, did the best. They'd put me on with Jerry Lawler. Here's what's here. I'd never had a match in my life.
Okay.
Never in my life. And I get to Memphis. Guess what my first two matches were? I shit you not. Live to tape television. They were doing a double shot. I wrestled Curtis Hughes in the main event of the first show. And then Jerry Lawler in the main event of the second one.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, Jerry, both of those guys are easy to work with. Right. But I was scared to death. I was like, I don't know what to do. And then Jerry's like, can you do a bill?
Jerry just leads you right through it.
Yeah, he's like, can you do a bill? And I'm like, what's a bill? And he's like, don't worry, I'll do everything. And he did. Curtis the same way. Curtis gets out the ring. He's, you know, just a heel, just following. Yeah. It's like working Regal. You don't have to do anything.
Right. They can work themselves.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's a pro.
Could have been a broomstick over there with a beard on it, and that'd have been the same.
Awesome, man. So, okay, so how soon did that pelvic injury happen in OVW?
So we were seasoned. We were ready to go. They had Arn had already come down. I learned this afterwards and said he's ready. You know, I think the general consensus was kind of like with Dave Bautista. Like, he's not perfect, but he's not going to learn anymore down there. Right. And we can get to that later, but I think I know, you know, looking back on my career and I think there's this, this trap you can fall into as a big guy when you're getting trained by guys who are not big guys.
Okay.
We'll get into that in a minute. You know, sure. We'll circle back to it and I'll tell you my concept on what happens there. But the same thing, I think they were realizing that, like Dave almost quit. But they were like, hey, and I think the Limp Bizkit thing aligned and they're like, oh, it's the perfect opportunity. So that was probably a year, maybe a year and 3 months that I'd been there.
Okay.
And that was happening. And then the, maybe a little less. And then the pelvis injury happens. And they told me that was going to be a year for that to heal. Wow. Told me it was going to be 6 months before I could even do anything. And I literally was, I was wrestling in 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very painful.
Quick question. Is that when the painkillers came in?
Not really.
No?
I had kind of, let me think about that before I say that.
Okay.
It was, I believe that time in the hospital was the first time I had had opiates.
Wow.
In my life.
How old were you? 28?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I never drank much or anything. Right. You know, just for the record, I'm 12 years sober now. I'll be 13 in October. And that's from everything. I never really drank to begin with, but I just quit everything.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
how do you?
Yeah, it saved my life for sure. But yeah, I think that in the hospital, I remember getting the morphine and all that stuff. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I can see why people like this.
Yep.
It sucks that my pelvis is broken, but I feel pretty good. <You know?
laughs> Yeah.
And I was really bummed that I was, I mean, I think I was in there just in tears because, you know, I just thought the whole career was going away. The perfect synopsis of going in there with, you know, as a bodyguard gimmick,
yeah,
you know, was it? So, and then I got out and just was determined to get back after it. And I did in 3 months. I think within 6 months, I was already back on TV, starting with Christian.
Wow. Now, how much pain from 1 to 10 were you in like your whole time on the main roster? Because
at first, Rip was taking care of me. I have to give it to Rip. Rip knew.
Really?
I kind of pulled him aside and told him.
Okay.
He's like, I get it, kid. I get it. And that's why you might remember him saying, how's your gimmick, Tomko? Do you remember him saying that?
That's what he was talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why he would say that. He's like, you want to do anything today? He's like, don't. He was kind of, Rip, you know, I love Rip, you know, and he's fun to make fun of. But I think deep down inside, he could see, you know, a young kid's dreams going away, and he didn't want to let that happen, you know, because he tells all the stories of, you know, what not to do. And from an old timer's perspective, I respect the fact that he would, you know, not say anything. Now to hear, I know Conway or Nick Dunsmore said he was just scared of me, but like Nathan Jones.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's digressing a little bit. I don't know if you remember. No, it's Nova, Mike Bucci that always brings it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So
1 to 10, probably 7, 8 during practice, trying to get ready.
Right.
You know, getting through it, stretching, getting home. I would go to physical therapy after practice, and they would do all this stuff to me. And it was getting better, but I was trying to hide it from everybody. So, you know, because I just didn't want.
That's the thing.
Yeah. That just continued to happen. I don't think I'm the only one that did that. Can't really blame WWE for any of this because I flat out lied to him. I don't know if you know, but when I was on the road in my gimmick, everything was going great. I tore my meniscus in Europe in a match with Shawn Michaels. Happened in the match. Basically said, oh, I'm fine. Because I had done my meniscus in college a little bit. So I was familiar with what the surgery was going to look like.
Yeah.
You can get back pretty quick. But I said, yeah, it's nothing. I'm going to be fine. I'm taping it up and I get back. And they're like, you need knee surgery. So this is a good story too. So I go get the meniscus surgery. They're saying it's going to be, you know, 3 to 4 months. You know, it's 3 on the short side. I call the office at 5 weeks. I'm ready. Do you get released? Yep, I'm released. I'm good. Because I'm, you know, doing Hindus. I'm good, right? It's painful, but I'm good. And then I get back to TV, and they had already replaced me as the problem solver. They had Viscera in the role. And I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, I go to Stephanie. I'm like, we'll just make it for one night. Can you do a promo? I was like, yeah. So Christian goes, this is my one night problem solver. So then I was like, they're definitely trying to replace me. So I'm never going to tell them my knee's jacked up. So, you know, I can't be the only one that was doing that.
Oh, no. I mean,
well, at least at our level, you know, if you're main event, and you probably can get away with telling them you're hurt, but
right. But there were so many guys. Like, I remember Andrew Test when he broke his neck, they fired him. So it's
that's the other thing.
That's it. Like, you're scared, man. It's like, fuck. Oh, let's get to some of these questions before the, you know, add up. How was it like working with Christian? Love the Tomko. Give me a beat segment response at Royal Rumble 05.
Classic. I love Christian. He's, you know, without Christian, I don't even know if I make it as far as I do, both in WWE and TNA.
Right.
And that particular night, we get to that promo, and Jay Christian was supposed to do this rap with Cena.
Okay.
And I think they had wrote it for me to, when he said, give me a beat, I was supposed to beatbox. And I said, I think I told Stephanie, I was like, I don't think my character would do that. And I'm not trying to be a dick, but he goes, well, what do you think your character would say? I said, I think I would just say no. And then they went and asked Vince, and Vince was like, I love it. So, or no, we just shot it that way. And they showed Vince, and he's like, I love it. And then it's incredible. It's like one of the most memorable little stupid things. You know, you never know how it's going to work, right?
Right. Yeah. What was your experience doing Eugene's musical chair segment on Raw?
Great segment.
Yeah. It's another, you know, that's a bunch of professionals in the ring that night. We barely went over that segment, believe it or not.
Wow.
And there, as I remember it, you know, who goes over a musical chair segment, right? But I knew where we were going. It was supposed to end up where either me or Jericho were going to be at the end. Yeah. And I do remember it came down, as I remember it, it was me, Chris, and Rick were the last three. And I remember, because we didn't go over it much because we couldn't track everybody down, Rick forgot that he wasn't supposed to stand up. So I think Chris had to grab him and pull him back down.
Okay.
If you watch that segment over, you'll see it where we're both sitting there and I'm sitting there, and then Rick goes to get up and do his thing, and Chris grabs him. Another part of that segment, and this is just to try to pop Jericho, we're sitting there face to face in the chairs, and Chris has had his family there that day, which he didn't normally have.
Right.
And so you can watch me mumble, and I'm saying, is that your kid you had here today? And he's just looking at me going, whoa. And he wants, like, cute kid. So if you watch that back, that's what I'm saying to him.
Okay. Undertaker versus Tomko, Mania battle for Fred Durst. There you go.
I think both of us are going to keep our boots up in the closet for a while.
Right. Well, shit, didn't Taker come out to Fred Durst rapping, rolling or something?
He did.
Rolling,
yeah.
He did, right? Yeah.
That was the night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Concussions, brother. Fuck. Tomko, you were tag team champions in both New Japan and TNA at the same time. How was it teaming with guys like Giant Bernard and AJ Styles?
So Matt Bloom, or Giant Bernard, or A-Train, love that guy, man.
Yeah.
We were like brothers. You know, we spent a lot of time. You know how it is over there.
Oh, yeah.
Japan. It's a great place, but, you know, you miss home and you just have a few American guys that you can kind of have a camaraderie with. So
that's when you're really bond.
You know, we bled and sweat and went up and down the roads in Japan. We did a long time. We were tag champs for almost a year.
Wow.
And just great matches. We had a great group of guys. We had Tanahashi there, Shinsuke Nakamura,
yeah.
Fergal Devitt. He was what's his work name now?
Finn Balor.
Finn Balor. Finn was a young boy in the dojo.
Young boy, yeah.
Yeah.
The dojos.
Yeah, believe it or not. Well, kind of. He was kind of getting out of that phase.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that kid too. I haven't talked to him in so long. But yeah, so great group of guys and just great crew, and loved Japan. I wish I'd started in Japan. And we'll segue into the big guy with that in a minute. Okay. But and then as it pertains to AJ Styles, just unbelievable. Like, AJ turned down the development deal.
He did.
When Renee and I were there, because he was just too good. He was too good, but he was also making more than they were going to pay us on the indies. So it didn't make sense to him at the time.
500 a week is what they offered.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So but man, it was so easy to work with that kid. He's just,
I remember seeing AJ with Matt Morgan. Now Matt Morgan had zero experience, zero matches. And they had a singles match. And it looked like Matt knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
That's
was that, in the, was that in the trial week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, wow, Matt's good, but he's not that good. But what? Huh?
It reminds me of that Bret Hart story when you say that. Do you remember? You know that Bret Hart story?
He worked. What's that guy's name, James? The Canadian, the bodybuilder?
Tom McGee.
Tom McGee.
Yeah, so they bring this big giant guy in, and he's all jacked and muscular, and they're like, all right, let's put him out there for a dark match. And he has this incredible match, and like, oh, he's great. And then the next week he comes out, he's no good. The next week he comes out, he's no good. then it keeps happening. He goes, man, I don't understand. What's he had that great match with that what's that kid, that Bret Hart kid. And yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, it's like same it wasn't thing. Him that was good.
Right. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
For James, can we have Jason's sensation cameo tournament? Is something we want to help Jason more? We'll talk about that later. Now it's Tomko's time. Congrats on Cornette speaking highly of you. Oh, I guess Cornette put you. Have you ever listened to Cornette's podcast? He's pretty
sometimes
popular.
I think I heard that clip. Yeah, I think yeah. I think he went into something like they underutilized me in both places. He did. Cornette was a booker when we got to TNA, so that was hilarious.
Oh, shit, was he?
Pretty well. He wasn't a booker, but he was highly in charge.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that him?
He was an on-screen character.
Okay.
That was also developing storyline in the back. That's the best way I can put it. Yeah.
So that's
I love Jimmy. Like, God, I wouldn't change that about my beginning of my career. That and Danny Davis, they were the perfect two guys. You know, Jimmy's just wild.
Yeah. And
Cornette, Danny Davis is more grounded.
Right.
But very, very salty.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever see any like crazy Jim Cornette stories with him like going off? Because you were around him a lot more than I was. Because I was only in OBW for like 5 or 6 months.
I did.
Yeah,
maybe. Let me see how many years that been. See if the statute of limitations has worn off. It's definitely been over 10 years. So, as you know, I was a bodyguard. And I guess something happened in the crowd one night. You may have been here. I don't know if you were. And Jim was hot about it. And somebody had disrespected somebody, or somebody with a group of people, and they were out in the parking lot.
Okay.
And Jimmy comes to me and he goes, hey, I'm not telling you that I want you to do this, but if you happen to go out in the parking lot, so I say no more. And I walk out there and I just get into a melee with like seven guys, and then Matt Morgan comes out and all that. Yeah. So we literally did a parking lot, like old school, clean up the house. And then I came back in and Jim's like, I said, call the cops right now. And he's like, what? I was like, oh, I think I told Danny, I said, call the cops. So why? Tell them that these guys jumped us. We've had to defend ourselves. And we're going to stay in the building.
Okay. Okay.
And, yeah, that's how you do that.
That's how you do that. Yeah, that's a professional right there. Duval.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's where I'm from. Jacksonville, Florida. Duval.
Thoughts on Orlando Jordan?
I love Orlando. Great kid. Yeah. I haven't seen him in a long time.
He's in Australia, man.
He's where?
Australia.
Okay.
Got married and lives in Australia with a kid.
He was in Japan for a little while. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
New Japan, right?
Yeah.
How many tours?
Maybe one tour.
Oh, okay. I heard some stories, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Any good Scott Steiner memories? I remember him yelling gibberish at you in TNA segment, culminating in him yelling, you're a dumb redneck, get my back. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So that was ad-lib, too. I remember Vince Russo coming up saying, hey, because I think we were doing something together, leading into something.
Okay.
And he's, and you know, the irony with Scott is he is nothing like that in real person.
No.
Usually somebody has a little bit of that in them.
Right.
And it's just turned up 10 notches, but exactly. That's nothing like Scott. So it's just all off the, you know, top of me. He's hilarious. But I do remember that segment. It's like, we, everything was one take there. There was no script, no. All right, this is what drive up here, and I think he's like, get my damn bags or something.
So that was taped in Orlando, and you always stayed in Florida. So that was just a drive for you every week.
So it was great when I was doing New Japan. I would go there. If it was like 10 to 12 days, usually their tour length, right?
Right.
And it would just worked out perfectly where TNA was taping. Two TV shows and a pay-per-view on one Saturday and Sunday, and then just the two TV shows on another, so I could make all of it. Wow. And it was on the Universal Studios lot, and that was 100 miles from my house in St. Augustine. So I could literally leave there, go do that, and then right after TV, we'd be home in my bed at night. Yeah.
Nice. That's the dream.
That's why I did it. It was perfect.
It was perfect, yeah. Hey, Tomko, when in the showers, has Michael Hayes ever come charging in, try giving you a reach around? Also, any stories of the shower? Michael Hayes, how did you get along with him? I'm sure he loved you.
I didn't have a lot of interaction with him. He
really?
Yeah, not a lot. Just mild interaction. And I think if that had happened in the showers, we probably would have heard of Michael Hayes not being around anymore. So. You know, depends on how long. You know what? Let me take it back. Depends on how lonely I was and how many days I've been on the road.
Right.
And you heard the Poland story about Michael Hayes.
I haven't.
Okay, so
Renee, do you want to tell him?
Yeah, so Paul London and Spanky, Brian Kendrick, were a tag team, right?
Mm-hmm.
For you know, and so they had a match. They're both in the shower after their match. They're showering up, talking about how, you know, fuck yeah, man, plan for the future and everything's going good. And then you ever get this feeling that someone's watching you, and they slowly turned, and when they looked over, Michael Hayes was leaning against a column, staring at him, showering. And then he looked at him and said, "You're looking good, boys. Looking real good."
And walked away.
Yeah.
So they've been traumatized ever since.
I don't blame them. I just threw up a little bit in my mouth thinking about it.
Hey, Tom Ghost, nice to see you again. Not sure if you answered this before. Are Christian good friends since you work with him? And yeah, do you keep in touch with
him? I talk to him, you know how it is. All the boys change their phone number every 35 minutes.
Yeah.
You know. So, but I messaged him a few weeks ago. It's tough. You just can't. I don't know what, you know, it's maybe you guys have talked about this with other wrestlers. I don't know what it is about us, but we're such a tight-knit group, but we're just, I don't know if it's just fear of somebody, you know, it's just fear of the other shoe dropping or somebody, you know, we just don't stay in contact like we should.
Right. I know. But you know, if I were to run into you at like a convention or something, and it'd be just a big fucking hug and fucking laughs, like we never fucking left each other's side.
Exactly. Right.
So weird. So weird. Yeah. So weird. Tomko, is it true you were a bodyguard for the Yes, it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, Travis. What was it like working with Kane?
It's funny you say that. I was taking a couple of guys out on my boat yesterday that are from Knoxville, Tennessee, where Glenn's a mayor at. And I was like, hey, I think I've gotten a fight with your mayor before. I love Glenn. He's just we had so much fun, not just in the ring, but on the travels. Me and him had so many inside jokes. What's right. that? Is it in Canada or where they got that big polar bear in the hotel or some big bear? I don't know. What
was it? Winnipeg, maybe?
Maybe. But anyways, me and him would always joke about there was one airport that had this big polar bear, and he's like, he'd come. We were at the gate and he goes, "Come with me right now." I was like, "Where are we going?" We're going four gates over to see some polar bear. But it's just always fun stuff with him. You know, he's hilarious.
So back to your WWE career, how long was your run in WWE? Was it 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then it was at a point where they, Brian Gerwitz had proposed, they were doing something with me and Snitsky. And I was, you know, obviously was trying to break out some singles thing. And I think I was supposed to do something with Benoit, then he got moved to SmackDown or something. And so everything just kept almost happening and falling apart.
Right.
And then I just vaguely remember Brian saying, "All right, next week I got something this we're going to talk about. It's going to be big." And then it just took 4 or 5 weeks. And I believe it was right at WrestleMania. And I think I told John Laurinaitis, like, "Dude, I don't know what to do here, but I remember what it was." And I say that, but I love Sean O'Hare. He's a great guy.
Oh, Sean.
Okay. But Sean was there to do a dark match, right?
Right.
And I was, this is the point where I kind of, because you know, you don't do this. This is the point how fed up I was. John comes to me and he goes, "Hey, you can do a dark match with Sean tonight." And I go, "It depends, John. What are you trying to get out of this? Are you trying to get Sean's job back? Because I'm not going out there to make anybody look good."
Wow. You told
said,
him that.
I told him that. And he's like, "I respect that." And then I said, "I don't know what to do, man. It's like, I'm just trying to figure out what," and he goes, "What if I could get you in Japan?" I was like, "Yeah, I'd absolutely do it." So he made a call to Simon. I think he wrote Simon an email Hoki at the show. And then Simon's like, when is he available? So then I put him, asked for my release. Yes. And then they gave him a release. And then that's
how it
happened. Yeah.
Wow. So that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm, exactly how it happened.
And the rest is, I mean, you had a great run in Japan.
The plan was to come back. John's like, "Go there for a year." He goes, "You know, you're going to love the strong style," because, you know, that's where Johnny was.
Yeah.
So he loved Japan. He's like, you're gonna learn all the things that, you know, and I'll get into it in a minute, but all the things that they won't let you see now. Like, as big guys, nobody wants to tell you how to be a big guy because it means taking away from their gimmick. That's just it. I mean, you know it. Like, you've wrestled big guys, and it's like, how much are you gonna give me? Right? Exactly. You're not gonna give me enough to make me look so good that I take your spot.
Exactly.
And I get that. I completely get it. But, you know, I think Brock was the only one that figured that out. And I think that's because he was in Vince's ear. I wish I would have figured that out sooner. And there was some indications, like, early on, like my first meeting with Vince, that I should have picked up on it. But right. I didn't, man. We were all trained to shake hands and respect each other. And what do you want to do? And, you know, what's the veteran want to do? And that's all fine and dandy, but it doesn't get you elevated to a main event spot. You got to have a little more tenacity than that, and you're not trained to do that. So how do you get that?
Right.
So that's what Johnny thought would happen, and it did. But I got over there, and it was so good. And then at the time, Jay was like, hey, why don't you come to TNA? So that happened.
Yeah.
And so I was supposed to go right back to WWE.
Wow. Are you doing any? Yeah, you don't. You're completely out. No meet and greets, nothing, right? This is your first podcast. This is an exclusive.
Exclusive only for
never done any interviews. I'm so fucking thank you so much for doing this because you know,
It's just I have to remove myself. It's kind of like when I stop playing football, it kind of breaks my heart that I can't do it anymore,
right?
And mentally, I have to remove myself completely from it,
right?
For you know, I think that's definitely what it was with wrestling. You know, I opened some businesses, you know, once I got sober and like this is what I'm gonna do. And the thought was in my head, I think I even went and did something for some guys and regretted doing that because I almost got hurt. And I think I just told myself, I'm okay. You have to make a decision. Do you want to die? Because that's what's going to happen. Wow. Like you're going to die. Like it's going to start off great and everything's going to look good, but then you're going to get hurt and you're going to do this and this is going to happen. I just played, as they say, I played the record out and I could see what was going to happen.
Do you want to get into the addiction? Because I mean, I'm a recovering addict as well. I mean, a lot of us from the Ruthless Aggression era got that bug, got that disease, man. I mean, there's more guys.
I was in it. I was in, you know, my story is I went to West Palm Beach, which is in Delray. That's the recovery capital, or at least the time it was.
Right.
And I was plugged in, man. I mean, good night. And I still have a bunch of friends and in the industry and. At first I was going, you know, I thought maybe that's what I would do. But I ended up opening some gyms, which is funny. It's funny because Steve Austin, one of the first times I met Steve, he's a watch guy. So I think I had a Rolex on or something. He's like, let me see your watch, kid. Look at my watch. And he goes, I was like, oh man, you know, any, you got, can you watch my match? Will you tell me, what do you think? What do you know? And he's like, I'll give you some advice. Here's the thing. When you get ready to open a gym, or when you open a gym, go work at one first. And I was like, I'm not going to open a gym. He goes, yes, you are. Yes, everybody.
Really?
Yeah. That's what he told me. And he was not wrong.
So he told you before you open a gym.
I guess. Work at one first. I guess all of them did and had no idea what they're doing. Yeah. I know Ric Flair did. I know all of them did. So, yeah.
Wow.
I took his advice, though. I did go work at a gym for like 6 months before I opened one.
And did it?
To learn what not to do. Yeah, exactly.
Do you still have the gym?
I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool. And that's in
Delray Beach. Yeah.
Delray Beach.
I had a couple of gyms at one point. We got rid of one because after COVID, everything got slow. But my one in Delray is great. I have a restaurant there, like a healthy restaurant. I had some hair salons with my wife, but we got rid of those. I'm trying to slowly fish as much as I can. You know, I'm doing a lot of what I realized, digressing a little bit. What I realized is what I love best about the gym part was building them. I think if I wouldn't have been a wrestler, I would have been doing construction. My dad did construction, plumber, and all that. I built houses when I was in high school in the summers and know how to do all that stuff. And so designing the gyms, I got, you know, how it is going all over the world, staying in the nicest hotels in every major city in the world, you get this eye and for the fit and finish. And so I developed that like an architectural eye. And what I realized after opening the gyms, although they're successful, is my favorite part was building them.
Wow.
So when, you know, the COVID hit, I kind of went into flipping houses because there's a lot easier. You can buy a house, fix it up, sell it, wash, rinse, repeat. You know, you're not having to operate it. You know what I mean?
Right. So, right. Fuck, man. Hey guys, question for Tomko. What was it like working with the Monster Abyss during your time in TNA? And is it true he turned down working with The Undertaker at WrestleMania back in 09? That's what I heard.
He's great. Yeah. Just
gentle
giant. Another guy that is completely opposite of his character.
Yes.
Like I would borderline say he's an introvert, very quiet, very, very, very polite, very nice, mm-hmm. very humble.
Yeah.
Just a sweet human being.
He is.
Fun loving guy, you know. And it was great working with him. We always had great stuff. He always wanted to give the fans everything. I've wrestled him 100 times.
Yeah.
And just always had great matches with him. And I would not doubt at all that he turned down that because he was so loyal to Dixie and those guys.
Right. Wow, that's
just the kind of guy he was.
That's rare in this business, man. Loyalty like that, right?
And Jeff Jarrett. He's very loyal to Jeff.
Very loyal to Jeff. Okay. Yeah. I think he's a producer now for WWE.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Full circle for him.
Yeah. You want to talk about our time in Japan together, teaming up and hustle?
I vaguely remember that.
So I left WWE in 2007, and Johnny helped me get, you want to go to Japan, Renee? I get you booked. So he'd same thing. Simon Inoki put out the press release. Tajiri, who I had worked many times in WWE, was one of the bookers for a company called Hustle.
Yep. That's who called me to do that show. I remember that.
So a day later, boom, after asking my release, I'm already booked in Japan. I stayed there 15 years. First company was Hustle. I, you know, did a few tours, and then they were looking for a partner. And Tajiri's like, who is there? So I threw a few names around. Who's available? I don't know. Fuck. You got to be big. They wanted a big blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. And I'm thinking, what the fuck do I know? Blonde hair, blue eye. I go, Sid? He's like, no, trouble maybe. I'm like, oh, Tomko? You're like, oh, man, Tomko, okay. And then you got booked and you came over there with me. And we had some good, man, did we work Akiboro together? Yeah. He just passed away. Did you hear about that?
I did. Man. I worked him a lot in New Japan in there.
Right. What a good dude, man. Talk about a gentle giant. Heart of gold.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And yeah.
Yeah, he just passed away a few days. I was trying to find a picture of him and I. I had this great picture a fan gave me where I'm taking a splash and he's about 12 inches from landing on me. It was in this big picture. You know, in Japan, the fans give you the coolest stuff.
Yeah.
I know it's somewhere. I got to find it. But as I remember it, correct me if I'm wrong, Lance Cade was supposed to be. And like, in fact, they had made that whole costume for him.
Well, me and Lance were teaming first.
Yeah, and then
stayed with Hustle for 2 years,
and then he just didn't show up or something. No, happened.
He got rehired by WWE. Back to WWF. Yeah,
yeah.
And then I was needing a partner, and that's when you came in. And I remember you didn't want to show off your tattoos, so you wore a T-shirt. Remember?
I think I did. Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I'll wear a T-shirt too. Who did we wrestle? Shit, I think we wrestled Koshinaka.
Shows were so, they were the different. Opposite of everything normal in Japan. They were more different.
Yeah, they were different.
I wasn't a big fan of that. Nothing to do with the guys. And I'm, you know, I love Tajiri, but it wasn't strong style. It wasn't anything else like All Japan or New Japan.
It was just
fun. It was more theatrics, I think, you know, their version of what WWE is, perhaps.
Bingo.
Yeah.
For me, it was my foot in the door. It's like, okay, I'll come here. I'll show them what I can do. I'll show them what I can work. And that's exactly what happened.
Wait, that was the first time you had been there?
First time I ever been there was with WWE.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
But the first company, Japanese company I worked for was Hustle.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then Hustle had a good relationship with All Japan. So you know how, like, you'll go for Hustle for like 3 weeks, but you'll do 1 week with Hustle, 1 week with All Japan, then another week with Hustle. Well, I did that. And then as soon as I did the 1 week with All Japan, they loved me and they said, okay, we want Renee full time. And that's when I started full time with All Japan, like in 2009.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
You worked Benoit back in March of 05. What was it like to wrestle Benoit? Did you find it easy? Any fun stories of Benoit? You guys became close, didn't you?
Yeah, me and Chris were best friends. We rode together for 2 years on the road. I mean, I think that was the beginning of me just losing it.
Right.
If you remember correctly, it was him and I and Chavo that found Eddie the was year it? Before. That. Yeah.
You were there.
Well, here's how it went down. Me and Chris and I think Conway, we were at a hotel, TV hotel. We were about to go on a big European tour.
Okay, yes.
And we were down there eating breakfast. And Eddie was supposed to meet us to go work out with us.
Right.
And then we called Chavo. It was like, hey, Eddie's not answering the phone. What's going on? So Chavo went to go check on him. And Chris is still downstairs. And we're eating breakfast. And then I think Chavo got the security guy to cut the lock off. And then Chris went up there. And we called Dean to come over. And it was, yeah. And then that just broke Chris. It broke him.
I know people had asked me, do you think the Chris Benoit tragedy would have happened if Eddie was alive? And my answer is always no way.
No.
Absolutely.
This is interesting. I think I knew him better than anybody. Although when that happened, he got moved to SmackDown. And then I left to go to Japan. There was about a year where we hadn't been together.
Right.
But we still talked all the time. You know, it was one of my best friends.
Wow.
And, but we weren't as close as we were when we were riding together. You know how that
right, is. Right, right.
And I do have some good Chris stories, but I don't want to skip over the tragedy of what happened. I think it's tragic on so many levels.
Yes.
One, you know, I knew his wife. She was a sweet woman. I knew his kid. I spent a lot of time with him. I don't know how you get to that place, but I can only imagine it's the most hopeless place in the world to be for you to make those decisions. And I can't imagine you do that with the right mind. No. So I know Chris had been home for a little while. He had some injuries. I know that, you know, when all the drug testing started and all that stuff, that there was some things he was having to give up and not, you know, so I know there was a lot of mechanics to that.
Yes.
And then a lot of concussions. I know I had a lot, but I know he probably had more concussions before he got to WCW from Japan than we have. Oh. Then he got him in WCW. You got to remember that he was getting the crap. Who was it? I forget who he had that deal with in WCW where they were just beating the piss out of each other.
Kevin Sullivan,
right? He would tell me stories. They would literally beat the crap out of each other for a shoot every night.
Yep.
Throwing each other on the head. So, I mean, the guy had definitely, I wish they'd have done a brain scan of that guy. But with all that said, it's hard. It's hindsight's easy, right? We can all look back on it and go, what if, and would this have been different? I think if Eddie was around, he would have had somebody to talk to. And for whatever reason, those two had a bond that was unbreakable.
Yeah.
And that broke him that night. I could just tell everything changed about him after that, you know, but before all that, Chris was just one of those guys that was just very quiet and very sincere, very caring. But you get bored on the road.
Oh yeah.
So I remember we had the Lincoln Continentals we would always rent because they were big and comfortable.
Right.
So we're riding down the highway and they're, you know, those big orange barrels, not the cones that they sometimes have.
Yes.
So we're riding down the road and it's just quiet. We probably got another 2 hours to go. It's 1 o'clock, 12 at night. And he goes, he's driving. And he goes, I wonder what would happen if I hit one of those barrels. And I go, I don't know. And then he's just sitting there driving. And all of a sudden he goes, wham! And it rips the mirror off. And he goes, he starts giggling. So that's what we did to entertain ourselves.
Oh, it's classic. That's classic.
Yeah.
Oh, man. James, do you have any questions for our guest? I'll be right back, guys. Give me a second. James, please.
Yep.
Hurry back. I'm going to miss you.
Oh, it's the scheduled toilet break. Now, you mentioned teaming up with Christian. Obviously, Trish was part of that package as well. How was she as a person to work with?
You know, it was great because at the time, Christian was trying to – well, he'd gotten hurt. I don't know how many people know this, but it was always supposed to be him and Trish, and then me, and then I was going to break away. And as I remember it, him and Jericho were supposed to be working a cage match coming up, and then he something happened to his back. It was pretty bad. He had to go to a couple specialists, and then he said, I can't wrestle. So they just moved me into his position, and that kind of formed Trish and I as a unit, because I just kind of took the place of him. We didn't know how long that was going to last, but it ended up lasting for several weeks, as I remember it. And so we started working together as if it was them. Different level. I think they were supposed to have a romance kind of thing, and ours wasn't that. It was more of, you know, just me of being a protector of her, and just the slapstick comedy didn't come out of that. But she was always great. She was a really hard worker, and always wanted to, I wouldn't say be perfect, but she wanted to make sure she gave it everything she had. And what I thought was impressive about her, she was, you know, she was a veteran by the time I got there, but she always asked everybody, what do you think? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? Right. And a lot of the guys who are veterans don't do that, or at least they don't let you hear them doing that. Right. You know, so.
James, you got any more questions?
Yeah. Like Renee, you've had your Mania spot as well. WrestleMania 21, you was basically part of the Money in the Bank match. And one of the infamous spots was when you had like Christian on your shoulders going up the ladder. But what was it like working in the Staples Center and working Mania?
So that was, I'm trying to remember if that was the one where the Raw after that, I wrestled Hogan. That was Staples Center. That was in California, right?
Yes.
That's right.
So that was probably the highlight of my whole like career, because we had that match. It was a great match. Every week leading into it, I had something to do. I think I came out and hit Benoit with the ladder, came out and hit Clint Kane with the ladder. It was a good lead in to a really good pay-per-view match. And then the next day, as I remember it, because it was California, they had been teasing somebody from Hollywood in a big 6-man tag. It was going to be Cena, HBK, and somebody from Hollywood, which everybody thought was going to be Dwayne, The Rock.
Yes. Right.
And then it was me and Christian and Jericho. So we found out early on that it was going to be Hogan. And I guess Hogan specifically asked to work with me. I'd only met him briefly, but I guess they were like, well, who's going to, I guess something like, who's going to make me look the best and not hurt me? You know? Right. So we had to kayfabe all the boys. We went somewhere to even talk about it and kind of go over it. I remember we had 3 segments for that match, which is unheard of on live television,
right?
Over 20 minutes. And then I think they had no idea what was about to happen. So we get announced, Cena gets announced, HBK gets announced, Hogan gets announced, and literally 9-minute standing ovation. We couldn't do anything. We had to go to commercial and like blew the whole, so you know how that goes. They're like, all right, well, now we got to figure something out. But it was, yeah. It was fun. And my childhood, you know, I didn't grow up watching a lot of wrestling, but I did grow up in the Hogan era,
right?
Where, you know, the Cyndi Lauper and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So my childhood dreams come true that night.
Yeah.
Because we go to the finish, it's just me and Hogan, and we do the whole, you know, this and the punches and the leg drop. And so, wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Man. I can awesome. Still, I get goosebumps still thinking about it. So that was a really cool. Yeah. So you asked me about WrestleMania, but I kind of group all that together that weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another question for Tomko. What were your dealings like with Vince Russo in TNA? Do you have any stew? Yeah, Russo, man, he's a, some people like him, some people can't stand him. You know, it's, what's your opinion on the man?
Always good to me. I found myself, cause I know him and Jimmy didn't get along at all.
Right.
And, my only thought process on him was, you know, what Jimmy wouldn't talk bad about him, but he would say, you know how Jimmy was. You know, you just knew they didn't like each other. And so you had to figure out that why, because Jim, for the most part, is an easygoing guy. And he's a no BS kind of guy. So right. You had to figure there was something going on. Never had an experience with Vince that way. He was actually very instrumental in pushing me there. Me and AJ got the tag team championships there. And I think that started off, it wasn't supposed to go that way, because it was me, AJ, and Christian. And we were trying to break away from that. And it was, as I remember it, they had Christian in a position where he's like, oh, I don't care if you guys get the tag champions. It doesn't bother me, you know, but it was, you know, how Jay is, it's just funny. But Vince was kind of part of, yeah, I think it'd be great if that happened, you know? So
right.
I didn't, maybe it was happening behind my back, but I never had any problems with Vince.
Okay.
Well, imagine AJ was just a proper professional, because you had a decent run as tag champions when I what I remembered of it anyway.
Of all the big guy, you know, I don't know, you wouldn't call AJ a little guy, but, you know, big guy, not so big guy, let's put that way. Combos, I think we are up there. I know that Sean and Diesel did something together, but Kevin, but the chemistry we had, it was effortless. Like, of all, and I've had a lot of tag partners. I enjoyed tagging with Kevin Fertig. That was fun. And we never got a chance to do it on TV, but I think that could have went somewhere. He never really got, you know, I don't know if he got a chance to tag on TV on WWE at all. No. And he was a very good tag guy. Taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Me and Snitsky did a lot together, and that was fun, but it was just, you know, more Keystone Cops most of the time. You know, but me and AJ, we were a well-oiled machine, and it was effortless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just a testament to how good he is. But I think at that point in my career, I'd come back from Japan and I knew who I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. 100%, man. Japan. Any dealings with Victoria Molina? Any stories?
Well, I know Victoria since the very beginning. Molina, not so much, just a little bit. I don't know if there's something I'm missing out of that question.
I don't know, man. This is our friend Rex. Rex is a great a fan of the show. He's from Ireland. Tomko, has Kenny Bowen ever offered you his famous lunch meat? Has he ever asked for a donation after every idea he pitched to you in OVW? Kenny Bowen, did he ever take you out to eat?
Kenny was scared to death of me. He wouldn't even make eye contact with me. It was weird.
Kenny the con man, Bowen.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know him very well, you know, just
right.
Didn't have a lot of interaction with him. And you'd hear all the stuff people, he was just fun to make fun of, I guess.
But, yeah. Well, he's Jimmy Cornette's best friend. And that's the reason why, you know, he was there. And he did a lot.
I heard all the stories and I was like, yeah.
Yeah. He did a lot of work.
Maybe I'm not pretty enough. I don't know.
You're on mute, Renee. Your mic's off. Your mic's off.
Can you hear me? Test. Okay. Travis, man, like, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I mean, I could talk to you for hours on end, but I mean, I know you're a busy man and you've got businesses, and I mean, oh, and you're a savior, man. You're problem solvers, right? Because we had a problem and you were there to fucking solve it, man. Thank you.
Lives so much. On, man. That's what I named my boat, Problem Solver, because it solves my problems. Nice. You know, so
these days you're just on the water fishing every day, right?
Yeah, I guess I'm working on a fishing TV show because I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
And I live in an area of the Florida Keys where they actually film 3 fishing TV shows in Hawks Cay, Duck Key area. And so that's something I'm working on. I'm really good friends with the guys that do the other shows.
Okay.
And so my idea is to kind of have a show, because I'm an addict, like real addict, but I'm also addicted to fishing. So I want to put something together where I'm taking other addicts out and putting them on the water, because it's really been a big savior for me to go out and spend time in nature and do what I love. Right. And also, look, man, I say this out loud to anybody who's watching, who's from our group of guys or even after us, you know, it's clear and evident. We do a lot of damage to our bodies, and you never know when the bell's going to get rung for you. So do yourself a favor and do something you love every day, even if it gets in the way of the stuff you're supposed to be doing. Be a little bit irresponsible. That's what I always tell people. I'm not rich. I'm irresponsible.
Ain't we old?
Well, Travis, man, it's so good to see that you're in good health. You're clean. You're sober. You're living the dream, as we said. Beautiful wife, beautiful life. And I'm just proud of you, man. And,
thank you, brother. Proud of you too, man.
Yeah.
I hope your show does well, and I'll be happy to come back on maybe another time. And
well, I'd love to have you back on, because like I said, I could literally talk to you for hours about you, because we didn't even scratch the surface of your career. So hopefully in maybe 6 months, come back and
maybe sooner than that. We'll see now that I know the format and the timeline. And
yeah,
you know, I haven't done any of these, at least in this stuff. I did a lot for the church and for sober, but I haven't done any about wrestling. So
no wrestling.
I'm happy to come back and let's do it again.
Awesome, man. Thank you, Travis. And you have a great rest of your week. Okay, my friend.
All right. See you.
All right. Good night, brother. Thank you, guys. Thank you.